Hello and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Oh, Andy, we are like 3 weeks out as we record this from Roll for Topic Con, and it's starting to become the crunch time where I'm like, oh no, I don't have any time for for all this stuff. I keep on thinking about it in terms of like prepping for a game, right? Yeah. Where you're just like, well, I'm going to do all this prep and hopefully it all works out. but at a certain point you just kind of, you hit the point where it's like, well, it's just going to be sort of what it is. Quite there, but yeah, it's getting down to crunch time.
And now you're not running a game, right?
I'm not running a game. Okay. No, but I've got a handful of other things that I'm trying to get coordinated before the day of. Yeah.
As listeners may or may not know, I don't live in the same town where the con is, but you do. So A lot of that nitty gritty work of like visiting the venue and figuring out food falls to you more than me. So
yeah.
I feel a little bad, but mostly I feel relieved. So.
Yeah, you should not feel bad. Yeah. The thing that I keep on meaning to check and then I forget about it and then I remember later is I'm in Ann Arbor, which is great. It's a lovely place. However, on the weekends, especially in the fall, you need to be well aware that there are football games that happen.
Oh yeah.
That I'm just like not tuned into. Sorry, listeners who are, diehard fans. And it's just like, sometimes this has happened a couple times where it's like, oh, there's a game, by the way.
Yeah.
The game the day of the con. It's like, okay, there's going to be another 100,000 people in the city.
I've pulled into Ann Arbor to go to the RFT con at like maybe 7:30 a.m. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of people dressed in sports colors walking around at really early in the morning.
Yeah, and they've already had a beer or two sometimes. Which is like, yeah, God bless them, but oof. Yeah. Andy, you mentioned you had something you wanted to bring up.
This is a question for you, and I'm also tossing it out to listeners. It's a request for recommendations. So My son came back from the first day of school yesterday. And I found him looking through his D&D folder.
Ooh.
And he was like, Dad, I think I'd like to try running a game again this year for my friends. So, okay, obviously, that's awesome. He ran games using Shadow Dark last year.
Yeah.
Which, due to just where he's at and his personality, that's as dense and crunchy mechanically as he's interested in doing.
But
I'm interested in doing something sci-fi.
Ooh.
In my room, we've talked about the size of my game collection before. In my house, I can get you something for almost any genre you want. I mean, like, give me a minute and I'll think of like what you could use and I'll go get it out of the basement. However, straight old ordinary sci-fi is not something I really have in my collection. And so here are the requirements. It needs to be like Shadow Dark level complexity, which is not complex, like some stats and a space for your equipment and like a couple of bonuses or something like that because you're a Wookiee. Yeah. But like that's about it. And combat should be mostly just theater of the mind, figure it out. Spell descriptions are like two sentences, not a half a page. So it needs to be that. It needs to not be like a 350-page book with small print.
Yes.
This is actually the biggest challenge. It needs to not be like horror or like gonzo.
Yeah.
It just needs to be like Traveler, but smaller and simpler and just easy to quickly start up. So do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, what I want is a Shadow Dark version of Traveler. If there's no game that is exactly fits that itch, what's the like simplest way I could empower him to do that with like another system?
Yeah, that's
with the caveat, I can't give him like, I can't give him like GURPS and GURPS space and tell him, look, you can do anything with GURPS. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And God love GURPS, but
No. I mean, as you started talking, I just was looking over like on my desk, I have a copy of Mothership that I'm going to be bringing to the con that I'm not going to play. But I mean, like, a lot of that sci-fi stuff sort of leans into the horror genre pretty quickly.
All of it. I like was Googling around because I was like, Mothership is exactly the mechanical density he wants. Exactly. But there's a picture of a disemboweled astronaut on the front cover and it's about doing kind of space horror.
Yeah. Which rules, but
I mean, it rules if that's what you want, but he doesn't want it.
I'm curious, like when he says sci-fi, then like what is he, does he mean like Star Wars?
I think he means like Han Solo.
Yeah.
Right. Like you're in a ship, you've got a party of heroes and they go around and maybe they're exploring stuff or maybe they're fighting bad guys or maybe they're just, I mean, these are all, he'd be playing with teenagers. So they're just going to be going around like causing chaos.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have some good like narrative, overly clever games that can do that, like Scum and Villainy. But yeah, he's not that, that's way beyond what he's up for mechanically.
Yeah, like Scum and Villainy is almost perfect for that. If it was a little bit lighter, but it is a dense book to read.
And the game can't really have anything narrative, and improv is not his thing. It just needs to be like as straightforward as D&D is, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, is Starfinder an option? Like
Starfinder is too dense mechanically.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I had the starter
set. It would be if there was like a stripped down Starfinder light or something, it would probably be perfect.
Does the starter set for Starfinder have a stripped down?
There is an old starter set for Starfinder. I don't have it. But I bet I could track down a copy.
Yeah,
it's for the previous edition, but he doesn't care about editions.
Yeah, I also used to have a copy of it, but I think it ended up on the swap table at RFTCon at some point. Yeah, I'll have to give it some thought. The one, there's a system that a friend of mine has been playing, the Nimble system, and I don't know if that has a sci-fi variant to it, but I think it's pretty rules light, but I think it still has a tiny bit of crunch.
Okay, Nimble, is that spelled the way the regular word is? Okay.
Yeah, the regular word. That might be one to look into as like for like a simple system that still has like a little bit of like progression to it, which I imagine they would also like. But there's nothing that jumps to mind. Yeah, because everything that I'm thinking about has kind of like that horror tinge to it. It's like the Alien RPG would, again, another great choice, but
Alien, there's I have like several space horror RPGs, Death in Space, Mothership. Those are all like right in the correct level of complexity mechanically. My GM brain is like, how hard would it be to just do like Shadow Dark, but just rewrite it for sci-fi?
Yeah. But you'd be doing so much on the fly that like, it'd be sort of hard to tell him ahead of time. Like here's all the things to think of.
Yeah. And he doesn't want to wait 2 months for me to like, you know, write some precious like homebrew system for him.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I mean, I think we'll throw it to the listeners. Like,
so write in if you have a suggestion for me.
The other thing, I don't know if you'd get a kick out of this. Like, I almost wonder, do you still have a Vault of Midnight out by you? Like, like a game store might also have a recommendation for something small. Like, especially like Vault of Midnight, at least out here, right? They're pretty good with carrying some like more indie games that might fit that. But that, because I think like larger publisher games, right, they're always going to tend towards like, let's do a higher page count.
I'm not criticizing any of the games I've mentioned here. They all like have their niche, but for some reason it's just not the niche my son wants. So
it is interesting. Like, I don't know if I've actually played I guess other than the Alien RPG that I played with you, I'm trying to think if I've played any like pure sci-fi games. I played like some cyberpunk stuff, but like not
that's a cousin genre.
I was looking up Rogue Trader. I don't think that's probably right. That's probably gonna be too grim for them.
That one is a lovely game. I've run and played in it, but it's too, I don't like the word bespoke, but I've used it twice now in this episode. It's too horror tinged, and it's the version of Rogue Trader I'm thinking of, at least the one from FFG from like a decade or two ago, is pretty mechanically dense, I would say.
I mean, you ruled out the Star Wars RPG, like the one with uses the Genesis system.
That one's too much. To mechanically too
much.
And
that is fair, because it is too much.
There is an the first Star Wars RPG is much loved, and that might be a possibility because it was pretty simple mechanically.
Yeah,
I'd have to look into it, and I don't know the state of its availability these days.
Yeah. That is a fascinating question. Like, because I mean, we don't really talk about sci-fi as much anytime that we are always talking about it, I think, in terms of horror, because it's like, it just lends itself so well. Well, to yeah, to one another.
Wait, I've dragged us down this side path too long. So you said you had something you wanted to talk about as the main topic on this episode. Let's hear it.
Yeah. So I had a very fun experience. So last week, my family was on vacation up at this place called Beaver Island. So if you are familiar with Michigan, you might know it, but even I'm finding a lot of Michiganders have never heard of it either. So like, you know, all the fun kind of goes to Mackinac. Beaver Island is also sort of up there in the middle of Lake Michigan. But it's a lovely place. It has a town there, and there's people that live there, you know, year round, you know, so there's a supermarket, there's a couple of, you know, restaurants and stuff like that. And there's just also just a ton of nature up there. And so my brother-in-law and sister-in-law have a house up there that they invited us to. So we go and hang out with them, like, you know, once a summer up there, which is super fun. But this year they've got a pontoon boat. So like,
okay.
I don't know if you've been on a pontoon before, but I mean, imagine if you had a living room and you put it on top of a boat, and that's sort of what a pontoon is, you know, doesn't go super fast, very comfortable. You can kind of sit around and talk.
Does it feel like you're on a boat? Like, do you feel embarrassed to tell people you were on a pontoon? Or is it not quite that bad?
What I will say is that the guys running the dock made a couple comments as we were pulling out. Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, there was, you know, it is the place where, like, you know, it's not like yachts are pulling up there, but like there are people in some pretty nice, like, other, you know, leisure craft and, you know, sailboats and stuff like that too. You know, and then there's us in the pontoon, and like, none of us care, right? Whatever.
Right.
Anyway, so one thing like about Beaver Island, so it's an island, and it has all these like kind of smaller islands off of it, right? And so it's sort of like, it's up in Lake Michigan, right? So they've got lighthouses and stuff like that, and none of the other islands are really big enough to sustain like a full city or anything like that. So a couple of them are owned by, you know, like private, you know, people that have their mansion on there. There's at least one that I think has like its own runway for, you know, private aircraft.
I gotta interrupt you. Is at least one of them, please tell me at least one of them is called Forbidden Isle, and like no one has set foot on there in like 300 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, this is foreshadowing.
So, oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So my brother-in-law has had this kind of this vision. There's one island that he's always wanted to get out to, right? So one of the guys that runs the dock, the marina, I'm very not nautical, so I don't know the appropriate terms for this. He has bought one of those islands, and he basically bought it as a defense against someone else buying it.
Okay.
Right. You know, cause it's not really like, you're not going to like, you could live there, you're probably not going to, right? But like, he wanted to make sure that it could kind of be more of a public good, I guess, if you will. But on this island, there is a couple of buildings that are falling apart, and there's an old dilapidated lighthouse up there too that is no longer in use. And in fact, it even has its own Wikipedia page as well. And because it was, you know, they ended up building a different lighthouse that kind of like, you know, does what they need on a different island, right? In a different place. So he's wanted to get out to this place for a while, right? And he's got a pontoon, which means that you can't just like go out whenever. Like all the conditions need to be exactly right for this to happen. And so
the pontoon doesn't do super well in like big waves, I'm guessing.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, yeah. So like, I mean, if you're imagining like Master and Commander style, like giant waves, you know, like, you know, Moby Dick, you know, like we got a man overboard, that sort of stuff. If there is a wave that is like 2 feet tall, you are feeling that thing, you know, like everywhere on the boat. And so the conditions were exactly right. And we're out on the water, and we're kind of just talking about it. He's like, well, you know, do we have enough time? Should we try to go to it? And it's like, yes, of course we should. So yeah. So we decided to go out to this island. So like, I bring all this up on the podcast because like this experience, and I'm going to get into more detail, more than anything, really crystallized the idea of like what it would be like to actually go on one of these sorts of adventures, right? Like you can imagine telling your adventuring party, like there's something on this island you need to go investigate. Like what actually goes into that to like get out to the island and all that sort of stuff. So, So we're on the boat, you know, it probably takes us, you know, 45 minutes or so of travel to get out there to the island. And so we like kind of go by another one and we go up there. But like while we're going, right. And again, this is me not knowing anything about boats. Like, you know, like my wife and my brother-in-law are kind of like pointing out the points at which the water is getting more shallow, right? You can kind of see once you start looking, like, oh, like there's a bunch of rocks up ahead. We got to slow down and like maneuver around and stuff. And like, yeah, pointing out like, oh, like cool rock formations and stuff under the water. Like, oh my goodness, there's a big drop off there, that sort of stuff too. But yeah, so anyways, we finally get to the island, and all we've been given is sort of a rough like idea of like, oh, just go to the southwest side of the island, or like the northwest side of the island, and you'll find a spot to kind of like, yeah, to throw down your anchor, and then you can get out to go explore the lighthouse. So we get out there, and like this is like 100% not how I would plan the trip, which is good because I wouldn't have done the trip.
Yeah.
Right. I'm just like, oh, we're just gonna have to find a place to like throw down our anchors. Right. Yeah. So we do that. And of course I am a dummy and I've not brought any like water shoes or sandals or anything like that. So I'm like, oh, I'm just going to walk from the boat. Cause you know, we're, you know, 100 feet off the shore. I'm just going to walk, you know, in the water all the way to the shore.
Yeah.
And I get like
they do in the movies.
Yeah. Like they do in the movies. And I get like 20 feet out and I'm like, my feet are getting chewed up by these rocks. Like I can't go further.
So and plus you're cradling your MacBook to try and keep it from getting wet. Right?
Yeah. No, I absolutely have like my phone in my, like I'm have my phone in my hand. I've got my shoes in my other hand. Like, I'm like, you know, like I just have this vision of like in Jurassic Park, like the nerdy lawyer who gets,
oh yeah,
I'm like that prepared for this, right? Like, I'd managed to throw on like a swimsuit before we left, but
right,
know? Yeah. So I finally decided like, okay, I got to put my shoes on. So like, you know, I've got these like these nice running shoes that I'm just like dunking in the water to try to put. They're not water shoes at all, but like I just gotta do something. So we, anyway, so like finally get that sorted out, and, you know, get up to the island. And then like, so we get up to that island and we're standing there and I'm just like, you know, like looking around and I'm telling my daughter, I'm like, you know, there's probably, I don't know, less than 1 million people that come to Beaver Island a year. I don't know what the exact number is, but like vanishingly few of those ever make it out into the water this far, like in a boat, let alone people that get out and like kind of go and check out the island. Yeah. You know, the guy that owns it, he's very gracious and he's like, you know, anybody who wants to go, you can go check this place out. So like, there's, you know, there's people there, but it's like, this is remote and that like, you know, not a lot of people are going there. Yeah. So we get there and then, we're like, well, how do we get to the lighthouse? Right. Cause it is overgrown everywhere. Right. It is like, you know, you feel like you're in a Lost episode or whatever. Right. There's like, there's no path. Right. Like what do you do when there's no path? So again, I'm thinking about your adventuring party, like your standard adventuring party. They've sailed to this place. It's like, how are you going to get from point A to point B? Right. Mm. Like this is like the classic travel, like the travel scenario. Like, and so we end up finding a way sort of through, but you know, we encounter, there's a bunch of poison ivy everywhere. Right. So obviously you don't want to step in that. There's snakes all over the place too. Mm. Like there's bugs, like there's just, you know, plants and thistles and thorns and stuff like that. So we have to like really make our way sort of through this terrain in order to get to kind of emerge into the area where this lighthouse is. So we get up to it and like this place is truly abandoned, right? Like there's some stuff there, like, you know, people do come there, but like, you know, it's, the lighthouse is attached to a house. And so I was brave or stupid enough to like, I wanted to go explore this whole thing.
Yeah.
Right. So again, I've got my phone, so I've got my flashlight, right? Like you're just wandering around this place. Like it looks like a horror movie set, right? Like this is like the, if I told you, hey, you're in a horror movie and there's this scene where you're in this abandoned house on the middle of an island, it looks exactly like that, right? Like, you know, yeah, like you can feel it as you're breathing, right? There's no light anywhere. There's like old, like, you know, beer cans strewn around the place.
Yeah.
There's also a basement. And so like, I'm like, well, I got to go in the basement.
Right? With manacles on the wall for some reason.
Yeah. So I get down to the basement. I didn't tell my kids this at all, but like, you know, so I get down there. I mean, it's pitch black. It is like, okay, well, this place is haunted, clearly, like 100% haunted. Right. Like there is obviously someone who's going to like, you know, strangle me down here, or I'm going to enter some sort of time warp or like, So I get down there, I'm just looking around. And again, it's just like, you know, there's like old cans and stuff. It feels like Fallout. It feels like all these like these media touchstones you can imagine.
Yeah.
I find there's one sandal down there. And at that point I'm like, no, I'm out.
turn around
and get out. And then, you know, we go up to the top of the lighthouse, and of course there's like spiders everywhere too. And it's like,
yeah,
but it's like, it's gorgeous, right? You're like, you're up in this place. And like, I live a very mundane life, right? I'm in front of a computer most days. To like get out to somewhere that remote, get all the way up to this lighthouse, and then you can like look out and you're like, oh, like there's, you know, it is a small number of people who ever make it up here, you know, in the course of a year, something like that, right? There's like this strange sense of accomplishment, right? That I think like when you're playing games in particular, like I think that to me is like the vibe. That's like the thing that like you're trying to get at, like going on these adventures, right?
Yeah.
Of like discovery, of like, you know, kind of getting over yourself, like your own comforts and stuff like that. Yeah, but I mean, it also just like, it was like, oh, this would be a fantastic scenario to have, like, right? Like,
yeah.
There was a, when we got inside the house, right? There was a guest book, right? Like, and the guest book was just like on the stove that was, you know, rusting out, right? Like, so like we, you know, signed our names and stuff in there. But you can imagine like, oh, like this scenario of like there someone left, you know, some piece of information you absolutely need, and the only place to find it is on this island, right? Like, you know, it's like you got to get to that island and explore around and stuff. And I think you can, having gone through that experience a little bit, like it just makes me think about the times where I've reduced all of that stuff to like a single die roll, right? Of just like, yeah. And I think we've talked a lot about sort of like how to make travel interesting. And I think oftentimes on this podcast, whenever we come back from a trip, we kind of have the same thoughts of like, oh my goodness, like, you know, we could make this so much more
basically
interesting.
Whenever one of us ventures into the world, like, is forced to, for some reason, we're like, oh my gosh, Chris, have you heard about this world that's about nature?
Yeah. It's got bugs everywhere. Yeah. But I mean, just like that whole like adventure, right? It's like, yeah, getting out to go do that, and it's like it then becomes this highlight of the trip too.
Yeah,
like this thing that like I probably, if I'm being honest with myself, was like, we're not gonna do, like, please don't make me do this, like, right? We could be on the beach instead or something like that. But I mean, you do it, and you like you get back, I'm just like that is like, yeah, that's like a highlight. Like, my kids will remember that probably for the rest of their lives, like that sort of stuff. Like it just has this huge dividend, like memory dividend, right? Like,
yeah,
think about it. But yeah,
and you said as a scenario you tossed out like, oh, maybe you need some information that's only on this island. But you just described going to the island for the sole reason of, hey, we should go here, I bet it's kind of cool here.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, maybe you don't need that much of a plot hook, because your adventurers are going to also look at the map and say, we've never been there. We see this island all the time. I wonder what's on there. I bet there's something cool there. I've seen there's a old building on here or something.
Yeah.
Like that. That's all you need to motivate a group of curious people.
Yeah.
To go check it out. Right.
Totally. Yeah.
And you went in the basement of your own volition, right? You didn't go down there because someone said the clue is in the basement.
Yeah.
You were like, there's a basement here. It's really creepy. I'm going to go see what's down there.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is just like, I don't know. It felt very unlike me, but also like very, very on brand for me to be like, yeah, of course I'm good. I have to go there and see. Yeah. It's it was just like a very interesting experience, because I think you're right. Like, I mean, if you did need to give your party some sort of like hook to do something like that, throw a piece of whatever, like treasures down in the basement or whatever, right? Like there's tons of ways to make that interesting. Or like, you know, they look at the guest book and they realize that, like, I don't know, the person they've been trying to find is, you know, checked in there 2 days ago, right? And is still on the island somewhere, right? Like there's like lots of like little ways I think that you can make that sort of like, yeah, I don't know, worth their while beyond just the like the sense of, oh, let's go check it out.
Yeah.
But it is I don't know, it was just cool. Like, it was cool. I'm really glad we did it. I don't think I'm going to go run out and go buy a boat or anything like that and start making this like, yeah, part of my life. But it's something that, yeah, I just really wanted to kind of share and talk through.
That is inspiring to hear, actually.
Yeah.
From a GMing perspective. So
it definitely will. It's like, I could see myself I really could see myself just saying like, the next time I'm running something, like that is just a scenario that is sort of in my head. head now. Like if, yeah, if we needed to have something at the table, it's like, okay, yeah, there's this mysterious island that we got to go, go out to. I will also say, have you watched the show Widow's Bay yet?
Not yet. No. Okay.
Yeah, it is. I think you would appreciate it quite a bit, but it, you know, Widow's Bay is all sort of about this like haunted island, like on the New England, yeah, haunted like New England island. Okay, yep. There were definitely some of those vibes about the whole thing too, but yeah.
Well, hey, that's awesome, Chris. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I think that is about it. Yeah. Do you have anything else that you wanted to chit chat about?
I don't think so. The question I like to ask you when, you know, one of us recounts an experience like this is just, you know, what are you going to take from it into your next GMing? Mm-hmm. And you've just said that, you know, you could see yourself running this whole thing as a scenario almost by itself.
Yeah.
But like, so how is there anything from this experience that you're going to take to like your next D&D campaign that's not on an island?
Yeah.
But that probably does feature travel into like interesting places.
Yeah. I think that's a good question. Yeah. I think there was a sense of time passing that I think like I often sort of step aside, like sort of step over in those games, right? Because like there was, you know, there's like downtime, right? Of like, yeah, you're kind of like, you got downtime on the boat, you got downtime while, you know, one person is scouting ahead, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like all those sorts of things, right? So I think like that stuck out to me more than anything, this like, you know, with this kind of real world experience. I mean, that too, and just like the little ways in which nature makes things hard on you, right? It's like,
yeah,
I think like it is pretty easy when you're playing a game and they have like these terrain rules of like, okay, like if you're on rocks, take a -2 to, you know, penalty. Mm-hmm. It's easy for me to just sort of be like, I'm not going to do that, right? But like, you know, like legitimately making our way across, you know, 200 feet of rock, right, took twice as long.
That might be the hardest thing your adventurers do all day.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's like, it would not be that hard to swing your sword at a rat, but like, yeah, trying to actually get across all this, all these rocks without falling into poison ivy is like, that's a pretty major thing to do.
Yeah.
Especially if you're like, yeah, hauling around all your plate mail and stuff.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I think that will do it for us. Thanks all for listening. Yeah. Please, if you have any ideas for Andy for what sci-fi game his kids should run, yeah, reach out. I think that'll do it for us. If you want to catch Andy, you can catch Andy and John Corey on Zombie Strains. If you need more Andy in your life, I started listening to your episode on the Omega Man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, while I was on vacation, which is really good. So,
yeah. Excellent.
Yeah, cool. All right. Well, that does it for us. I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
Remember, if your player's having fun, you're a great GM.